ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Fresh Frozen Southerner podcast. My name is Jay. I hope all is well. All right, guys, to start off today, I want to talk about Bill Maher a little bit. Now, I've been a fan of Bill Maher's for 30 years. I've seen him in movies. Even when I was a little kid, I saw him in a couple of movies. He always played a good character. When Comedy Central first came out, they were showing a lot of clips of stand-up comedy. You know, this was before South Park and The Man Show, and they weren't doing their own programming at that time, but they were showing stand-up clips. They were showing a lot of reruns of Monty Python, Benny Hill, things like that. But I saw a lot of his comedy as a younger man. I always thought he was really funny. When he had his TV show, I don't know if it was his first TV show, but on Comedy Central, then on ABC, he did Politically Incorrect. I really enjoyed that show. Now, back when he was doing Politically Incorrect, it was more balanced. He was always very outspokenly a Democrat, but there's a difference between a Democrat and a progressive. I've discussed that before. And even though I didn't agree with everything he said politically, I really liked his sense of humor. He was more fair-minded back in the Politically Incorrect days. Since then, I don't watch a lot of his shows. I've never watched Real Time, but he's become, over the last 10 or 15 years, he has sort of adopted the mantle of the tip of the spear of the change politically that has come over the discourse in this country. You know, when I was a kid, first of all, people really didn't talk about their political affiliation. Unless there was a election coming up in the next couple of weeks, people just didn't talk about what party they supported. You hear the old axiom, don't discuss politics or religion. You never hear that statement anymore because so few people belong to an organized religion anymore. The country just becomes more and more secular as time goes on. And I don't really think it's a coincidence that as our society becomes more secular, politics becomes more important in daily discussions. I think that human beings are sort of hardwired to look to something beyond themselves, to think that there is a higher power, to think there is something in control. And as people drift away from religion, and they'll never admit this to themselves because that would mean that they are exactly like the Christians that they've made fun of viciously on their Facebook page for the last 10 years. But people are putting politics in place of religion. I have got friends that absolutely anything that comes out of the DNC is like a papal decree to a devout Catholic. I mean, they just buy it 100% hook, line, and sinker. There's no thought about the statement or what it might mean, or does this contradict something that they said 2 weeks ago? It is literally just Moses from the mountaintop decree straight from the lips of the Lord. And we have known for generations that you do not try to argue with somebody's faith. Well, that's the position that politics are taking, and you're getting the exact same response to questioning somebody's political views that you used to get when you questioned their theology, which is just immediate anger, pushback. Why are you asking me this? What kind of person are you? And that is what our political discourse has turned into. You know, when I was a kid, the belief was you and I disagree, and it's because we look at things differently. Well, in the last 10 or 15 years, that has completely flipped into you disagree with me, and it's because you are a terrible, horribly flawed person, and you're evil, and I hate you. Which sort of precludes any further discussion once you reach that point, and especially when people reach that point immediately. Bill Maher has sort of followed that, well, not sort of, he absolutely has followed that same route. When he was doing Politically Incorrect, again, he was obviously on the Democratic side, but the jokes toward the Republican side were, you know, more good-natured. Why do we look at things a little differently? And the guests on his show also reflected a balance. He would have a couple of Republicans, a couple of Democrats, and they would be a good back and forth, but nobody wound up shouting at each other or calling anybody names. The newer shows, which I don't watch real time, it's he'll have three far, far left people, and the times that he does have a Republican on, it is always just the most milquetoast, panty-waisted, cowering Republican they can find. And the entire show is just those three people just absolutely attacking the one Republican. Four, if you count Bill Maher, because he's jumping in too. He completely abandoned any pretense of trying to get a balance. And on top of that, the good-natured jokes that were from Politically Incorrect, I mean, he has just gotten to where he is just so arrogant and so belittling to anybody that does not agree 100% with him that I just can't watch it anymore. As much as I like the guy, as much as I enjoy his comedy, and I say I like the guy. I don't know if that is a persona he's adopted because it got viewers or if that's actually the way he feels. If it's actually the way he feels about things, I really don't like that personality type, that narcissistic, blowhardy, I'm right, you're wrong, shut up and listen to what I have to say. I don't like that, and I don't watch shows that beat the drum for one side or the other. Like I say, I lean conservative. I don't watch shows where the host just talk about how great the Republican Party is, because the Republicans screw up all the time. All the politicians do. You got to be able to admit when they step in it. You don't get that in the mainstream media. The left-leaning media, if you watch them, Democrats are absolute pure beings and they've never done anything wrong. And the Republicans are just pure evil and they've never done anything right. And if you're watching Fox, you're getting the exact same thing just reversed. And if you actually believe that somebody that you agree with politically has never made a misstep, you're a fool and I don't need to be talking to you because you're not thinking about anything. You're just following. For that reason, I don't watch Real Time with Bill Maher. And again, it's a shame. I love his comedy, but I just can't do it. But if you've been following the news, here for the last few months, Bill Maher has made a little bit of a shift in his opinion, and he has really started going after woke culture. I don't know when this started. I became aware of it when the actress Gina Carano was fired from Disney because of a tweet that she put out referencing pre-war Germany. While we're on the subject, I have not heard anybody mention the hypocrisy of that entire situation. I don't know what her tweet said word for word. The gist that I've gotten from it is that she said the cancel culture is much like the culture in Germany in 1937, where if you believe the wrong thing or you say the wrong thing, they come and they take you away. Well, the woke mob was so incensed by that statement that they immediately did exactly what Gina Carano said that they were doing. That should be a red flag that your movement is just a religious fervor at this point, because if somebody says this is what you're going to do and you can't stop yourself from doing it, even though you're pretending to be offended by the fact that they said that, you're not using your head. But ever since that happened, Bill Maher has really been going after woke culture, and he's really going after the millennials and the things that they believe. I have seen a few of the clips of him monologuing about millennials and supporting communism and pretending like all the things that happened before they were born doesn't count because they weren't there. He's got some very good statements to make. It's good that he's talking out about this, and I applaud him for recognizing, you know, if you're doing something wrong, it's better if you realize it up front that it's wrong. But if you get a few months or a few years into that bad decision and realize that, hey, this was a bad decision, at least you come to that conclusion. At least you got there. You know, my hat's off to him for noticing. Very, very few left-leaning celebrities have noticed or have the balls to speak out if they have noticed. So I don't want to take too much away from Bill Maher for coming around on this particular issue. But why is it that you didn't come around on it when they were just going after the right? You know, they're going after people in your industry now. Comedians are being shut down. Actors and actresses are losing their careers because of some innocent little joke they made 20 years ago. But why didn't you care when they were just attacking Republican politicians? They were doing the exact same thing then. You waited until they came for your group to start getting upset about it. And again, I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the rational side of this argument. But I just can't simply give you full heroic warrior status because you were fine with it for a while until they started chipping away at your base. And one other thing, no, there's no way in hell Bill Maher's ever going to get wind of this, but just in case he does, the people that you're attacking for their logical fallacies, they don't watch your show. And you point out the reason for this in some of your diatribes about the millennials. They're always saying, okay, boomer. Well, they're not going to watch your show because you are, in fact, a boomer. Now, my kids like to call me a boomer from time to time, and I have explained to them on several occasions that a baby boomer is someone that was born between 1946 and 1964. There is a range that you fell into the post-war baby boom. That's why they're called baby boomers. I was not born then. I was born in 1975. I am not a boomer. I understand that your age group has decided that baby boomer is anybody that's not old enough to buy, or I'm sorry, baby boomer is anybody that's old enough to buy a beer at a bar, but that's not what it is. You can't just change the definition when there is a specific criteria to fall into a baby boomer. And you can't just decide that it refers to anybody who's not 14. But that's also why Bill Maher is not doing anything but preaching to the choir, because he was born in 1956. Bill Maher is officially a boomer, and the millennials don't care what he has to say. They're going to treat that exactly the same way they would treat some crotchety old guy yelling at them for taking up two parking spots at the grocery store. They're just going to treat that the same way they treat anything else that comes from somebody that's 5 minutes older than them. They're going to say, okay, boomer, and they're going to go about their lives. Okay, guys, even though I have talked about Bill Maher for half of the show's runtime, it is actually not the topic of today's episode. Today we're going to do Chapter 4 of Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, and I need to share a suspicion with you. And this has been growing as I've been reading through the book. Like I've said before, I'm enjoying the book. It's given me a lot of insight into Saul Alinsky. He's not nearly the maniac that you would think based on how the left treats him as a demagogue. But I am starting to suspect something. And what I suspect is this. Saul Alinsky did not write this as a passion project. I'm starting to believe that he was either offered a book deal or he lobbied for a book deal and wrote it to cash a check. Because, like I say, it's only chapter 4, but this is not a long book. It's 196 pages. We're 2/3 of the way through this book at this point. There has not been a lot of information. You know, he's doing a lot of his personal philosophy, a lot of anecdotes, but there's not been a lot of here's what you need to do to be an effective, quote unquote, troublemaker for the establishment. And I go back and I listen to the episodes after they've been published. My son says that's weird, but I'm trying to get better at my delivery. I'm trying to tighten up my narratives. That's something that I'm really trying to work on, is to tell a better story. It seems like I kind of bounce around all over the place a lot of the times. And I've noticed I say the word "and" a lot. I've really been trying to cut back on that. I'm not having a great deal of success at this point, but I feel like I'm starting a lot of sentences with "and then he said this" or "and this happened." And I'll start sentences off with "and," which is not grammatically correct, but it's sort of a habit I've fallen into apparently. And it's one of those things you don't notice it until you're listening to yourself talk. But it feels like when I go back and I listen to the episodes that I've done on the Rules for Radical chapters, it seems like I'm just really skimming over the information. And I promise you I'm not. It's just a lot of these chapters, there's not a lot of meat on the bone. There's a lot of fluff. He talks a lot. Like I say, there's a lot of anecdotes, but he doesn't really get to a lot of solid information about how he went about being a community organizer. It's really just a lot of flowery talk and personal philosophy, which is good, but it's really not what I was expecting out of this book. Chapter 4 is much the same, and again, the chapters are fairly short. They're about 20, 25 pages. Chapter 4 deals with communication, which really could have been a very informative chapter, and he does have some good information in there. He's talking about how when you're talking with an individual or a group, you have to find common ground with that group, or they're not going to either understand what you're saying or they're going to dismiss what you're saying. And one of the things that he says early in this chapter is he could always tell when he had found that common ground, because he could see the recognition dawn in somebody's eyes. And he says almost without fail, the person will say, "I know exactly what you're talking about because." And he says when he sees that and when he hears that statement, he knows that he has found that common ground. And now that they have that common ground, they can proceed on the topic and they'll both understand where the other is coming from. Now, this is excellent advice, and it's certainly something that we could really use more of now. Like I said earlier, there is no discussion once you've reached the "you're evil and I hate you" point. And that's where everybody goes just immediately. Once you've went to that point, there is no finding common ground, because there is no common ground between you. There is simply a gorge in between your position and that horrible evil person on the other side of the gorge, their position. And you don't even need to try to understand where they're coming from, because it's you're simply so far apart, there's no point. But it does make me wonder if I had a time machine and I could go back to 1970 and bring Saul Alinsky to the modern day, could he be an effective community organizer now? Because he is very critical of communism in this book. Again, I don't know if that's something he's saying because he was still coming out of the Red Scare or if he actually did not like communism. But in the book, he has been very outspoken against communism and how it actually takes power away from the people and the community. Could he go into these communities where the majority of the people are actively lobbying to go to a communist-style government? Could he do any good in those situations? Because I feel like the way things are today, if he went into these communities and tried to tell them, you know, communism isn't good. It never winds up good for the people. It just puts every ounce of power into the government's hands, and that's not where it needs to be. I feel like that he would absolutely get just shut down right out of the gate. If you don't agree with us on communism, you don't need to be here. There's no discussion to be had. Maybe I'm wrong. I feel like that is the way it would go. Another point that Saul Alinsky makes in this chapter is that you have to understand that people are going to look at a situation based on their past experiences. Now, he gives an analogy in the book. He says that he was at a nice hotel in an affluent part of a city, and he was speaking to a couple of friends, and he was trying to get this point across to them, and he felt like that they weren't really buying into what he was saying. And he said, well, here, let's do an experiment. I'm going to walk around the block, and every person I pass, I'm going to try to give them money. And so he walked around the block and he said his friends went with him. And every person he passed, he had a $10 bill in his hand. He would walk up to the person and say, here, please take this. Now, he said that without fail, all of the people refused to take the money. They were very suspicious of why he was trying to give them the money. He said a lot of people would just flat out ignored him and just walked around him. And he explained to his friends, these people are not used to being given money. They're not used to taking handouts. The fact that I'm trying to give them money out of the blue confuses them and it scares some of them, but they think that there's an ulterior motive and they don't want any part of it. And then he told his friends, he had another acquaintance that felt like he needed to give back to the community. And one of the things he did is he went down to the poorer part of a city and was passing out $5 bills. And of course, down there, everybody was taking them. And it's because their frame of reference is, you know, they're used to being on government assistance, getting handed stuff. So they didn't think it was odd that somebody was giving them a $5 bill. Now, who knows if this actually happened or if it's just a nice anecdote for the book. It does illustrate the point, though. Things that are out of the ordinary for people, that are out of the pattern of what they're expecting, is going to confuse them. It's going to put them off. So in order to be able to communicate with somebody, you have to understand how your actions are going to look to the person you're talking to in relation to the past experiences of that person. And again, that is not something that's easy to do, because if you don't live that person's life, you're never going to know 100% what they went through, how they feel about things. But again, we've reached a point in our society where nobody even bothers to try to do that. It's just, here's how I feel. You should feel the same. If you don't, there's something wrong with you. And there is one last point from the chapter that I do want to go over. Alinsky said that when you're speaking to someone, you can't speak in generalities. You have to make it about something specific and something close to home. That's part of the problem when people always say, well, the government's corrupt. Well, the federal government is a long way from most people. I live relatively close to D.C. Even for me, it's a 4-hour drive down to D.C. But even if I went to D.C., I can't get an audience with any senators or congressmen. I'm going to be told to leave, especially now there's probably still a damn fence up. But Alinsky was very correct, and unless it affects a person, most people simply don't care. And I'd like to read an excerpt from the book dealing with exactly this. And again, he's talking about tailoring your message so that the people that you're speaking to feel like it impacts them and it's not just some broad general statement. They cannot be generalities like sin or immorality or the good life or morals. They must be this immorality of this slum landlord with this slum tenant where these people suffer. And when you do that, people feel it on an emotional level that they're just simply not going to if you're talking about general housing plight or, again, the corruption of the government, which is an excellent argument against letting the government handle all this stuff to begin with, because exactly the way an issue like corruption in the government really doesn't affect people on a personal level, giving the government the power to try to help these communities is exactly the same way. The people in the government don't know who these people are or what their plight is. Them, it's just, you know, more money that I can throw around and maybe get reelected. They don't really care about the people. They care about how it appears come reelection time, but they're not really interested in helping the person specifically. And it's interesting that the Democrats, or more specifically the progressive left, in the 60s and 70s, their rallying cry was "Your power to the people." Well, now those exact same individuals are all yelling "Power to the government. Let the government take care of it." It's bizarre the way things change over time, that the same people that were saying one thing 10 years ago, they're on the exact opposite side of the argument now. And they never stop to think about that fact. They never stop to think, you know, how did I arrive at this point when this is where I started from? And it's sort of my argument that if you go too far to the extreme, you're actually getting close to the other side. And just to bring everything around full circle, it's exactly like the woke mob and cancel culture and Bill Maher. In one of the clips I watched of Bill Maher ranting about millennials and cancel culture, one of the things he said is that, you know, these people are getting angry at him because he's pushing back on them. And he said, "I didn't move. You moved." And if you'll pardon the pun, it should be a huge wake-up call to woke culture that you have gone so far to the extreme that you have got Bill Maher, one of the most outspoken leftists of the last decade, borrowing a quote from Ronald Reagan. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that is about all I've got for you today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please leave me a like and a comment. And if you'd like to subscribe, that would be greatly appreciated. As always, you can leave me a comment at freshfrozensoutherner@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on the Fresh Frozen Southerner Facebook page. All right, guys. Thank you very much for sitting with me once again. I appreciate your time. I hope everybody has a good work week. I will talk to you again on Friday, and happy Tuesday, everybody. We'll talk again soon. Thank you very much.